Orioles were off yesterday. They start a three-game series in Seattle tonight. Tim Barbalace, Mike Bordick, Baltimore Baseball tonight at 6. Let's talk some Orioles and some Ravens. Maybe a little soccer as well with Todd Karpovich. Covers the Ravens for BaltimoreSports.com, the Orioles for PressBox. And Karp, thanks as always for joining us. We're exactly 4 weeks away from the trade deadline. How aggressive do you expect the Orioles to be?
I think they'll be aggressive. I think this is the year. I think they have the talent, to make a run at this. And, you know, it's obvious they need starting pitching. Garrett Crotchet, Luzardo from the Marlins, two names that keep popping up. You know, Mike Elias said, you know, right now it's a seller's market because there's so many teams, you know, with the extra playoff spaces, there's so many teams in contention, you know. So a lot of teams don't really want to, you know, trade pitching. But you think the Blue Jays, the White Sox, teams that are already so falling down, so far, they'd be good partners. But, mm-hmm. I think the Orioles would be aggressive if they learned their lesson last year, you know, by not being aggressive. So I think, you know, they're looking at starting pitcher and maybe the bullpen arm.
The biggest trade they've obviously executed to this point is the Corbin Burns deal, which is working out well for both teams. We opened the show with this discussion. We've got a poll up on it. I want to get your opinion. Like, I'm of the mind that, like, I love everything about him, but this franchise having a 33-year-old pitcher and halfway through a 6-year, $300 million contract, I just don't know that that's good business for them, especially without having any call certainty about Gunner or Adley or Westberg or after that, Basayo, Holiday, whomever. Would you agree with me?
Yeah, they got to allocate those funds. I mean, I think your first priority is trying to get Gunner signed.
Yeah.
And you got all these young guys that are going to command huge contracts. You're right. You know, Burns, you know, he's awesome. He's in the running with Cy Young right now, you know, at the award with Seth Lugo, Kansas City. I think they're the two top pitchers in the American League. But again, you know, the Orioles have a lot of decisions to make. They're going to spend a lot of money to get these young guys signed. So, yeah, that might be, you know, and ideally, you know, they can start drafting some of these pitchers and developing some of these guys, as opposed to position players. Mike Elias really devoted most of his resources in the minor leagues to get these position players developed, and now he's thinking about getting his pitching. But, yeah, Burns might be a luxury. And no doubt, I mean, Burns is going to, what the season he's having, he's going to test the free agent market. And somebody's going to throw a lot at him. I think he's going to outprice himself in Orioles anyway, so it really doesn't matter.
Scott Boras has taken no discounts. He got his nuts handed to him last year. If Corbin Burns can make one more penny pitching in Topeka, Kansas, he's going to Topeka, Kansas.
Yeah, you know, the Orioles' relationship with him has been great over the years. I got to agree with you. He's going to be getting – Burns is going to command a huge salary. I don't think the Orioles will be able to match it wherever he goes.
Topeka's got deep pockets.
They do. Yeah.
I'm just saying. Anyway,
I know
he would go.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. Todd, we talk a lot about what prospects could be untouchable, what prospects could end up getting dealt, but – do you think there's a possibility of some major leaguers, guys on the 26-man roster, getting dealt to improve this roster?
Yeah, I was looking at that. I don't see what they, you know, Kerstad be a guy that can dangle, Calder that can guy that can dangle. Santander is a free agent this year. You know, he's a 30 home run hitter. They have surplus outfielders. Maybe, you know, he has value for a team with the power down on the stretch run. You know, I don't know what you get back from Mateo. You know, Jason and I were talking about this last week at the pool about Basalo. Is Basalo more, is he more, you know, valuable than Jackson Holiday right now?
Right.
Because of the catching situation, you know? That's something to think about. I don't think they're trading Jackson Holiday.
Sure.
But in all accounts, these teams, they want Basalo. That's the guy, you know, most teams are eyeing because he's hitting so well. And now, you know, he's going to play in the futures game, you know, so he can grab more exposure. So, yeah, as far as the major league roster, you know, they're not going to trade any arms because they can't afford to. So, you know, one of their outfielders, you know, they would trade. Maybe, I don't know how much value Mullins has. Or I can't conceive them getting much back for Hayes, you know.
Yeah.
So, the swim pickers on their major league roster, as far as he doesn't have the packages guys with minor leaguers.
Well, when we're talking to Todd Karpovich, Inside Access here on the Fan, what about a name? And we talked about this last segment, like Ryan Mountcastle, Karp. And if Kobe Mayo is more suited to eventually be at first base, Ryan Mountcastle's got some value. Could you see them trading him?
That's interesting. Yeah, he could command, you know, something back, especially, you know, with the Orioles. You know, that left field porch he so has trouble with. That guy's interesting, you know, because they have some guys who can play first base. And Adley might be a guy who eventually takes some reps at first base. So they have that That'd be another guy, you know, you see about packaging for a pitcher. That's interesting because he's another guy who can really help a team down the stretch with his power.
Todd Monken, obviously, season did not end the way he would have liked, a lot of people would have liked. How confident are you that he can, you know, put that behind him, that this offense can evolve, and a team that's still, and let's face it, there's not a whole lot of wide receivers out there who have lit the world on fire on this roster right now. The offensive line is clearly in flux. How confident are you that the offense could pick up where it left off?
I'm pretty confident. You know, they were good for 17 games last year. Mm-hmm. You know, they won the most in the league. This is the second year under Monken's offense. Look, man, the Ravens panic in the playoffs. Okay, I mean, that was it. They got away from what got them there. They got away from what was successful. That was running the football. It's inexplicable. They've done it a couple times in the playoffs, you know, in 2019 when they were 14-2. You know, they got away from what they did. What, you know, so I wrote a story this morning. You know, the Ravens aren't judged on whatever the season's anymore, you know.
Yeah.
They're going to be judged on what they do in the postseason. They're going to be judged on winning Super Bowls. That's the way it's going to be. You know, I think they have a good team. I think they have a really good roster. The starting lineup, I think, is, you know, a top five roster. I think they're going to make the playoffs. The question is, what are they going to do when they get there? Are they going to stay to their strengths? Are they not going to panic? Are they going to play, you know, Ravens football? That's what they get away from. That's what's cost them in the playoffs. So, I think Tom Monken's offense is going to be fine during the regular season. It's a matter of, you know, they stick to their strengths in the first season.
Todd, how much concern does just the offensive line, the question marks along that, give you?
I think there's a lot of uncertainty there, you know, replacing three starters. I think, you know, Pro Football Focus put out a ranking. They were the 25th, offensive line in the NFL, which I can see, you know. Mm-hmm. I think the offensive line has potential. I think Rosengarten's going to have a pretty good year. I think Voorhees is going to have a really good year, the way he's worked. I think they'll be better than people expect, but I think there's going to be some growing pains there. The first, you know, six, seven games of the season, these guys they could know each other. But John Harbaugh said he wants to have the starting lineup set early in training camp so these guys get used to each other, get their timing down. So, yeah, I think it's a work in progress, but I think they're going to be okay. When you got Derrick Henry, Lamar Jackson, that's going to mask a lot of poor play there.
Carp, and they can get back to, excuse me, Ravens and Orioles in a minute, but I'm interested in your thoughts in last night's soccer match. Jason's going to give his thoughts at 3:15. The U.S. team loses to Uruguay last night, 1-0. Felt like the officiating kind of jobbed them. That said, where are you on the U.S. men's national team? I know you are a huge soccer guy. I'm curious to get your thoughts.
Well, the U.S. lost against Panama. That was a game they shouldn't have lost. Uruguay wasn't playing for anything. They didn't have their coach on the side because they had a red card, and they still won 1-0. It's universal that this coach has gone. Berhalter has to go. This team is underachieved. They have their whole starting line plays in some of the best leagues in Europe. They should be playing better. They did attack, you know, against Panama. They went down one man. They stopped attacking. They should beat Panama 3-1 with 10 guys, with 9 guys. You know, it's been an unmitigated disaster with this coach. Now the question is, do they spend money and go out and go up a big time coach? Or they sort of settle for, you know, his assistant. But yeah, it's obvious this national team needs to be overhauled and it needs to start ASAP because this World Cup's in 2 years and the U.S. is hosting. They can't afford to get knocked out in the group stage in their own World Cup.
Watching the game with our buddy Mike Dieter last night, and like right around halftime, it just sort of occurred to me, like, Christian Pulisic is, you know, as talented as any player we've ever developed, and he's coming off a season where he's highly decorated in a league, you know, in Italy that he just moved to, where most Americans have suffered over the years. It's been a tough league for American players, by and large. And Todd, he's been a focal point of some of the biggest failures in U.S. soccer history, and he's only been on the scene for, you know, 6-7 years. Like the you know what I mean, the loss at TNT, and I'm not saying it's all on him, but like he's on the pitch for that. Like he's involved, you know, to some degree in this whole Gio Reyna, Claudio Reyna, Bearhalter, you know, all the infighting that's going on at the World Cup. He's a he's one of the more outspoken voices about bringing this idiot coach back, right? He's on the pitch for the loss against Panama. He's on the pitch last night where they were going to need goals to advance. They never came close to scoring goals. And then he's you know, fighting with the officials. Like, I think they need somebody to challenge him. Like, I think all these guys are too comfortable, and Bearhalter knew his fortunes was tied to them liking him, so he's just sucked up to all of them, and the whole thing is like this incestuous, like, well, we all sort of fail up, even though we fail.
That's exactly right. And, you know, and whoever heard, you know, when they hired, Bearhalter, they asked the players their opinion. And the players said, hire Bearhalter, which is the worst thing. It's ridiculous. The worst, you should hate your coach. What great coach players love? Sir Alex Ferguson, Manchester United, they hated him.
Yeah.
Sure, David Beckham and cut his head open, but he shipped David Beckham out because he said he didn't fit in the culture of Manchester United anymore. Great coaches make hard decisions. And this guy's not it. I will say Pulisic did hedge a little bit on that last night when he said, and they asked about the coach, he said it's not his decision to make. So that wasn't exactly a ringing endorsement. Yeah, but great players elevate the players around them, and he's not that guy. He's just not that guy.
Todd Karpovich, he covers the Orioles for PressBox. He covers the Ravens for BaltimoreSports.com. Karp, always great, man. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, brother.
We will chat next week.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.